tie into what Mom Donnie was saying about money and politics. But put that aside. It is also, I would imagine, has the most amount of immigrant population in the country and diversity of immigrants. As you may know, one of the big news stories over the past 5 or 6 months has been about immigrants and immigration and ICE and court cases. The only thing I can think is, because Colbert's politics are usually better than this. And so the only thing I can think about is that it's quite possible, and certainly in a show like this, that the candidates come on and say, ask us about Israel. Because if I'm going on this show, I am going on the Late Show. I think I called it Colbert Report. I'm going on the Late Show because I want to talk to old people who are like me. And I mean this specifically, like my age, late 50s, 60s, 70s. That's, you know, that's who watches these shows. And I want to make them feel comfortable with Mom Donnie, because Andrew Cuomo has been putting out on these same airwaves over and over again, not a friend of Israel, not a friend of Israel. And so that's what I think is going on here, as creepy as it is. But let's hear their answers, because I'm a bated breath. Are we going to launch an invasion of Israel?
I support the vision of Israel as a Jewish and democratic state.
Mr. Mamdani, same question. Does the state of Israel have the right to exist?
Yes, like all nations, I believe it has a right to exist and a responsibility also to uphold international law.
Okay, well, let's talk about the elephant in the room, is that there are many people in New York, even people who would support your candidacy otherwise, who don't want to support you because of the Jewish community's fear of the true and rising anti-Semitism, not only around the world, but in this country and shamefully in New York, which has the largest Jewish population of any city other than Tel Aviv in the whole world. And they are worried. They're very upset by some of the things that you've said in the past. And they are afraid that your mayorship would actually lead to increased anti-Semitism, that they believe that that would be more dangerous for them. What do you say to those New Yorkers who are afraid that you wouldn't be their mayor, that you wouldn't protect them?
You know, I know where that fear is coming from. It's a fear that is based upon the horrific attacks we've seen in Washington, D.C., in Boulder, Colorado. It's a
all the way from Jews will not replace us to today.
And it's a fear that I hear also from New Yorkers themselves. You know, just a few days after the horrific war crime of October 7th, a friend of mine told me about how he went to his synagogue for Shabbat services, and he heard the door open behind him, and a tremor went up his spine as he turned around, not knowing who was there and what they meant for him. I spoke to a Jewish man in Williamsburg just months ago who told me that the door he left unlocked for decades is now one that he locks. And ultimately, this is because we're seeing a crisis of anti-Semitism. And that's why at the heart of my proposal for a Department of Community Safety is a commitment to increase funding for anti-hate crime programming by 800%. Because to your point, anti-Semitism is not simply something that we should talk about. It's something that we have to tackle. We have to make clear there's no room for it in this city, in this country, in this world.
And no justification for violence of any kind?
No, there is no room for violence in this city, in this country, in this world. And what I have found also for many New Yorkers is an ability to navigate disagreement. You know, I remember the words of Mayor Koch, who said, if you agree with me on 9 out of 12 issues, vote for me. 12 out of 12, see a psychiatrist. And I had an older Jewish woman come up to me at B'nai Jeshurun, a synagogue many months ago after a Democratic Club forum. And she whispered in my ear, I disagree with you on one issue. I'm pretty sure you know which one it is. And I agree with you on the others, and I'm going to be ranking you on my ballot. And I say this because I know there are many New Yorkers with whom I have a disagreement about the Israeli government's policies. And also, there are many who understand that that's a disagreement still rooted in shared humanity. Because the conclusions I've come to, they are the conclusions of Israeli historians like Amos Goldberg. They are echoing the words of an Israeli prime minister, Ehud Olmert, who said just recently, what we are doing in Gaza is a war of devastation. It is cruel. It is indiscriminate. It is limitless. It is criminal killing of civilians. These are the conclusions I've come to.
Stephen, can I?
Sure, please.
I mean, and by the way,
pause it for 1 second. Now, I will say, like, you know, this is pretty masterful stuff because he is not backing down from his positions. And he is basically just explaining, you know, how he is trying to provide a permission structure for older Jews who remember Ed Koch, incidentally. He's not talking to anybody under my age by bringing up Ed Koch. He is literally just talking to a specific cohort. All right, let's just play another minute because I want to hear Lander here. But I'm surprised that this was brought up in this and can only imagine that this was invited by the candidates. It may not have been. And if not, like, I mean, people just listening to that question when we cut it off thought, like, dude, you got to let it run out because he's obviously doing a joke.
Before you answer, I want to say if we're not able to fit everything in this interview on the broadcast, we will put the whole thing up online unedited. Okay, go ahead.
So, look, I'm a proud Jewish New Yorker. Raising two Jewish kids here is the joy of my life. I'm the highest-ranking Jewish elected official in New York City government. I'm nervous about rising anti-Semitism. And also, I believe in the humanity and the human rights of Palestinians. And I know that it is possible. I support that vision of Israel as a Jewish and democratic state, but I hate what the Netanyahu government is doing in Gaza. And I've been saying that a long time. And look, no mayor is going to be responsible for what happens in the Middle East, but there is something quite remarkable about a Jewish New Yorker and a Muslim New Yorker coming together to say, here's how we protect all New Yorkers, Jews, Jewish New Yorkers and Muslim New Yorkers are not going to be divided from each other. We build a city where you have affordable housing and good schools and safe neighborhoods for everyone.
Well, Mr. Mamdani, I'm just curious, how do you think, you'd be the first Muslim mayor of New York, how do you think you could build a bridge of understanding between the significant Muslim population here in the city and the significant Jewish population here in the city? How do you think you could lower tension?
I think by foregrounding that humanity. And in many ways, that's the most New York City thing we can do. Because for so many of us who've grown up in this city, difference is something that we celebrate. It's something that we know is actually a part of the fabric of this place that we call home. And, you know, many years ago, I was the campaign manager of a Jewish candidate for state senate. And I took him to a mosque in Bay Ridge. And after he gave his speech at Friday prayers, an older Palestinian man came over to him. And he looked at him and he said, "Cousins." And I think that there is this possibility of building a shared life in our city, because ultimately that is the story of New York City. It's a shared life of people from across the world. And it's one that we know, even in the language of the hostage families themselves, everyone for everyone. We are tied together as one.
Well, we have to take a quick break.
I mean, that's impressive stuff. That's really impressive stuff. And we're going to see this. I mean, look, the bottom line is, what I also find interesting, some of the stuff that Cuomo has been doing or not doing reads to me like he's already sort of thinking, I'm going to have to run in the general as not a Democrat. And this appearance also has that feel of Mamdani sort of like understanding, if I win this primary, I'm going to have to deal with this in the general. So I might as well do it now. And because I think he understands he can't get, if he can't sell this in the primary, he's definitely not going to be able to sell it in the general. And as time goes on, he's going to be even better at this. I mean, I don't know how much room there is, frankly, to get that much better, but it's really, really impressive.
And good on Lander and then also Blake and Myrie, some of the other candidates, for going against Cuomo. And,
yep.
You know, this is how this should look.
All right. In a moment, we're going to be talking to Leah Littman. She's the author of Lawless, How Supreme Court Runs on Conservative Grievance, Fringe Theories, and Bad Vibes. And be talking the Supreme Court in general. We still have a couple of opinions expected from the Supreme Court. And we got well, not an opinion this morning, but another shadow docket ruling. We'll talk to her about that as well. When was the last time you needed to go to a doctor but pushed it off? Like
right now.
I just caught up on a bunch of like my appointments last Thursday, but I'm too busy. I don't need help. I don't want to deal with. I don't want to. I don't know what doctor to go to. I don't know if they've checked my insurance. Okay, everybody's been there. Booking a doctor appointment can feel daunting, but thanks to ZocDoc, there is no reason to delay. They make it super easy to do. They help you find a doctor, book a doctor, one that's right for you, and also like make the insurance process, which is always a huge hassle, at least make it transparent so you know what you're getting into. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. Talking about booking in-network appointments with more than 100,000 doctors across every specialty. Mental health, dental health, primary care, urgent care. It doesn't matter. All of it. I think like most of it. The vast majority of it. I don't want to say all, but I would imagine almost that. I've never found anything not. You can filter for doctors who take your insurance. You can filter for doctors that are located nearby, that are a good fit for any medical need you may have, highly rated by verified patients. And then once you find the right doctor, you can see their actual appointment openings. So there's none of this like, do you have anything after 3 p.m., unless it's a Thursday, in which case I can do starting at 10 a.m., unless, of course, I have to go across town, in which case it's 11, and then they go back and forth. No, you can see their appointment openings. You choose a time slot that works for you. You click it, and then instantly you have booked a visit. Appointments made through ZocDoc also happen fast, typically within 24 to 72 hours of booking. You can even score same-day appointments. You've used ZocDoc before, and I know Emma has.
Picking the time is that's the key feature of it for me. Just, 3:15 on a Friday.
Makes it so easy. And it's also just so much easier to know, like, I've got all the insurance stuff. I know it up front. Emma has also had great experience with ZocDoc. I had my doctor before there was an internet, so. But I'd like to thank ZocDoc for sponsoring today's episode. I did actually, was out of town once and found a dentist through ZocDoc. Did they used to advertise with us a long time ago?
I'm pretty sure.
I think so. Stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/majority. Find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/majority, ZocDoc.com/majority. Also on the program today, I don't know if you've ever heard of Nutrafol. I have. I've been using it for like 3 or 4 years now. I thought I was getting a little thinning. I didn't want to take drugs, but I wanted to have thicker hair and to keep my hair as I, sundown, which is happening actually like this afternoon. It's like, this morning. You may have heard of Nutrafol's hair growth supplements and wondered, do they actually work? It is a fair question. Many hair supplements overpromise and underdeliver, but Nutrafol is different. As the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand, it's trusted by over 1.5 million people. It is clinically tested to deliver real results in just 3 to 6 months. Thinning hair, of course, is different if you're a man or if you're a woman. So a one-size-fits-all approach to hair growth doesn't cut it. Nutrafol has multiple formulas for men and women that are tailored to fit different life stages, postpartum or menopause, lifestyle factors such as a plant-based lifestyle, so you can get just what you need. Plus, users of Nutrafol men reported no impact to sexual performance. While many supplements rely on ingredient studies, Nutrafol tests the entire, the final formulations. So they don't just look like, oh, some people get some results with this vitamin and that. No, the final formulations are tested. They use advanced measurement tools like hair counts and pull tests to track real improvements in hair growth, quality, shedding, and texture. It's not just backed by studies. Their research is published in peer-reviewed journalists and journals, rather, and vetted by doctors, ensuring scientific rigor and reliable results. Building hair growth routine is easy. You order online. You don't need a prescription. Enjoy free shipping, automated deliveries, and up to 20% savings with a Nutrafol subscription. Plus, get free naturopathic doctor consults and a Headspace meditation membership. Start your hair growth journey with Nutrafol for a limited time. Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping. When you go to Nutrafol.com, enter the promo code TMR10. That's the letters TMR and the number 10. Find out why Nutrafol is the best-selling hair growth supplement brand. Nutrafol.com, spelled NutrafOl.com, promo code TMR10. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code TMR10. All right, quick break. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Leah Lipman, author of Lawless, How the Supreme Court Runs on Conservative Grievance, Fringe Theories, and Bad Vibes. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Emma Vigeland out on her honeymoon. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the program Leah Lipman. She is the author of Lawless, How the Supreme Court Runs on Conservative Grievance, Fringe Theories, and Bad Vibes. And you do a podcast with Kate Shaw. The name escapes me. What is
Strict Scrutiny is the podcast.
Strict Scrutiny, yes. I enjoy that quite a bit. It is one of the legal podcasts I listen to get my fix of never having become a lawyer, despite all the greatest wishes of my family. all right. So with that said, I want to talk about your book in general, and then we can sort of apply it to what we're seeing on a daily basis. Your vision of the Supreme Court is one which is we are looking at legislators of some sort, but really are doing so based on a particular, almost like psychological deficiency, it feels like. I mean, and first let's talk about how grievance seems to have like really taken over the court. And let's go back to even to like, I feel like Scalia was the unofficial chief justice of that grievance.
Yes. So I think that that's totally right. The book is about how the Republican justices are fashioning the law and sometimes just declaring the law to be the political talking points and feelings of the Republican political elites. And the big feeling, or at least one of the big feelings, is this idea of conservative grievance, the notion that the core constituencies of the Republican Party, social conservatives, religious conservatives, plutocrats, super rich, they are the victims today of a variety of discrimination, maybe because society doesn't share their views, anytime the law doesn't go their way. And so they're taking this idea that Republicans, conservatives are an oppressed minority and using that to justify all of these outlandish rules that essentially give Republicans more and more political power, social control, and entitle them to do whatever it is they want.
When did this first begin? I mean, I know that in like, was it 2012? That year you were clerking for Anthony Kennedy, who I also find to be a very interesting figure, and his sort of journey over those years. But when do you think this became the case? I mean, I think there's always been a quality about the Supreme Court, at least it's been my sense, that there's a lot of reverse engineering. It really just becomes, yeah. You know, it's really just a question of like, what the threshold is for what parameters you need to stay in reverse engineering things. But it seemed to really drop out at one point for the right.
Yeah, so I think that that's right. The Supreme Court has always been political, ideological. But what's accelerated over the last few decades is how partisan they are, and also how sloppy and just feeling like they don't even have to conceal these partisan talking points into the semblance of plausible legal arguments. As to when that happened, I agree with you that Antonin Scalia was really sowing seeds of this, particularly later in his career. You know, in the chapter on LGBT equality, for example, I write about how Justice Scalia's dissents in the cases invalidating the Defense of Marriage Act, or the case invalidating state laws that criminalize consensual sexual intimacy between persons of the same sex, those dissents really previewed how the Republican justices would eventually form majorities around this idea that the Constitution protects their prejudices and actually gives them the right to engage in discrimination, at the same time that it doesn't protect the LGBT community against discrimination. So I think there are several key moments in the Supreme Court's history. I mean, Bush versus Gore is obviously this key moment where the court jumps the shark.
I was going to ask you about that, because that does seem to me to be the crossing of the Rubicon. And I distinctly remember that Newsweek had a story back when Newsweek was, you know, a substantial publication, that was actually going to run, I think, on September 11th or 12th of 2001, that there was a big fight that broke out over the summer when they met with some Russian judges who were ostensibly coming to see how they could. And it broke out over Bush v. Gore. And give me your sense of, like, was that the moment where at least the Scalia guy was like, we can get away with this?
I mean, I think so. That was a moment where the Republican justices just ordered a state to halt its recount, risked disenfranchising minority voters, ordering the state to certify the Republican candidate as the victor, on the basis of this legal theory that they announced, well, this is only good for this case. And then three Republican appointees write separately just to announce, well, here's this other potential theory that basically allows us to roll back voting rights protections that state courts or state executives attempt to protect. So, yes, I think that was a real moment where the Republican justices, if the public was ever going to draw a line and say, this is something you justices can't do, you would think that it would be effectively deciding the result of a presidential election on the basis of a cockamamie theory, disenfranchising citizens. Alas, you know, that line was not drawn. And so what happens after that? Well, they feel okay dismantling the Voting Rights Act, campaign finance regulation, announcing that partisan gerrymandering can't be remedying in federal court, overruling Roe and basically facing no consequence for doing so. And the list goes on and on. And so I just think the problem has really snowballed since then.
Yeah, I mean, what accounts for that? I mean, well, I mean, just in terms of Scalia, like, do you think that he was just sort of sundowning? Because, you know, Scalia was the type of guy that, like, you know, not to single anybody out, but my father would say, he's so brilliant.
Yeah.
And there was this real sort of like, he may have been, articulate or, and I don't know if he was a brilliant jurist, in the 90s, but certainly by the time you get to like the late aughts, he's just parroting Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah. So, I think this is always a tough conversation because I think if you look at his decisions, I point to his 1996 decision in Romer versus Evans, where the Supreme Court invalidated a state constitutional amendment that prohibited municipalities in Colorado from protecting the LGBT community from discrimination. Justice Scalia writes this angry homophobic dissent about how, the court has signed on to, he calls it like the homosexual agenda, right? This is also Lawrence versus Texas in the early 2000s. So I think that this is someone who had his moments, but was clear, that like he was always kind of on the side of the social conservatives, religious conservatives who were insisting that the Constitution just protects, traditional understandings of sex, sexuality, and marriage. And he didn't really feel the need to justify that beyond just pronouncing it.
He sort of echoed that in, was it the 2013 rollback of the Voting Rights Act, where he said, we're giving special privilege to Black people in their voting or something.
He called it a racial entitlement.
The voting. Yeah, it's right. Cute.
I mean, no.
Was that one of the ones, when you look at the milestones that are hit, is that one on this trajectory?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Republican justices on the Supreme Court invalidated a key part of the Voting Rights Act that had been renewed on a bipartisan basis, on a unanimous vote in the Senate, right? So like Republicans in electoral politics felt like there is no basis for us not to renew the Voting Rights Act. And Justice Scalia somehow turned that into a constitutional problem with the Voting Rights Act. He said, they're going to lose votes. They're going to lose votes if they vote against the act. But if a politician
that they were
does
afraid that they exactly. were afraid. And that's right. why and like, that's how democracy works.
Exactly. Right. The idea that democracy victimizes them when it doesn't entitle them to do whatever they want. Right. Like that is just very upside down.
I just as we were talking about, it, I remember that part of it. And it is insane. And particularly because up until that moment, maybe before that, the only thing that we heard through the 90s in particular into the early aughts was judicial activism, which was purportedly where judges go and make up the law and supersede the legislature. And that was beyond, that's not just judicial activism. That is like mind reading and telekinesis. And I mean, it was insane.
Yeah. And, add to that the Chief Justice's majority opinion, manufactures this constitutional problem with the Voting Rights Act, the supposed difficulty that arises when Congress imposes a rule on some states, but not others. That rule, didn't exist. It's nowhere in the Constitution's text. The Reconstruction Congress obviously treated the former Confederate states very differently than it treated, the states that had fought for the Union. And in order to cite a case that suggested such a principle existed, the Chief Justice had to insert a misleading ellipsis in a prior opinion that literally made the case say the exact opposite of what it had said. So the extent of their lawlessness and entitlement on matters of democracy and voting rights is really something to behold.
I want to get into some of the other sort of fringe theories that they've developed as a way of sort of like getting to where they want to get to. But maybe like temporally, it's a good, in terms of the timeline of this, the development of these theories. Talk about or if you feel comfortable talking about Anthony Kennedy, because I mean, the thing that I remember the most about Kennedy was his whole gerrymandering journey, where he had said that at one point, if we had a clinical way of determining or a methodical way of determining whether something is, or mathematical way of determining whether something is actually overly gerrymandered, then maybe I would, then the court would have to address it. That subsequently did end up happening, and he didn't vote that way. But also he said that in Citizens United, it won't be a problem with people spending money because disclosure will, in fact, inhibit people from doing this. And then subsequent to that, we find out like, oh, well, it doesn't matter if there's disclosure 6 months after the election. The election's over. What was your sense with that guy? Was that just sort of like a game or was what was happening with, I mean, those are very big sort of core democratic small D issues there.
Yeah, I mean, like, he also joined the majority opinion in Shelby County, dismantling a key part of the Voting Rights Act. So I know people look back on Justice Kennedy and think of him as, like, this moderate institutionalist center of the Supreme Court. And it's true, he was, like, the median swing justice in the sense that he sometimes voted with the Democratic appointees on big issues like LGBT equality and sometimes with the Republican appointees on other issues like campaign finance and voting rights. I think the reality is, however, he was a hardcore conservative and Republican. He just had, you know, one or two matters where on issues of LGBT equality, he understood, you know, the humanity and dignity of that community. And there were also a handful of cases where he was moved for, I think, institutional reasons to be convinced that he couldn't overrule a prior decision like Roe or couldn't overrule prior decisions upholding affirmative action because that would make the court look too political. But again, his instincts were always pointing him toward the kind of hard line Republican position because he was appointed by a Republican and was a Republican.
That dynamic that you talk about where he had an institutional, he had a fealty to the institution of the Supreme Court, that to me seems to be the sort of like the that's where the rubber meets the road, and it has shifted. And I want you to talk about these fringe doctrines that they have developed because for lawyers, it seems to me that notion of protecting the institution of the law, and many of them grow up like perceiving it as like they're members of a clergy, protecting institutions of that of the law and the notion of precedent and following, you know, stare decisis is all something that like they have the latitude to move, but it's almost just like tradition and some type of like peer pressure on some level is what keeps them in line. And that sort of fell us away. And I wonder what your theory is to why. I mean, was it a function of like the Federalist Society developing its own sort of like guardrails and creating a different sort of like water that they're swimming in or what was it?
I think it's a combination of two things. I do think that part of the story is the development of the Federalist Society and this alternative ecosystem that would validate them, validate the justices for doing the things that the conservative legal movement wanted them to do. So they were no longer just looking at national media, which is reflective of public opinion. Now they had this entire universe that was just telling them, you will be patted on the back for doing Republican things and you will be criticized if you depart. But you add to that the decline of our institutions. And I think that that also made the Supreme Court feel more removed from public opinion and therefore more able to depart from it. You know, given Senate malapportionment, for example, it's now so much easier for a majority of senators not to represent a majority of the country. It's easier for the president because of the Electoral College to win the presidency when he doesn't win the popular vote. And I think that those institutions becoming more susceptible to capture by minorities also make the Supreme Court feel less pressure to respond to public opinion. Because realistically, the pushback against a Supreme Court, meaningful pushback, would come from Congress And if Congress as an institution is now more responsive and more accountable to increasingly narrow segments of the country, then the Supreme Court will feel that they can be too as well.
Do you think that the Democrats failed to recognize the way that the Supreme Court and liberals, broadly speaking, the way that the Supreme Court was changing and the like the sort of the development of the Federalist Society? And still, it seems to me, they still, like, I mean, I know Dianne Feinstein probably was not had her full wits about her, but, you know, when she wanted to hug Lindsey Graham, like, this was a great hearing. I mean, all of those things, it's haunting. Even Obama in pointing Garland, and then not, when's he going to get an interview, not just keep, like it was so much fealty to the institution yeah. that it would have been like untoward to send up another nomination.
Yeah, so I completely agree the Democrats failed to see what was happening before their eyes. You know, as the Republican Party was becoming increasingly radicalized, as the conservative legal movement was becoming increasingly weaponized, they just denied that that was happening and continued to have this image of the Supreme Court and the Republican Party in their heads that just reflected a bygone era. I do think that the problem persists to this day, and it is, you know, constantly coming back to haunt us that the Democrats, you know, again, didn't see that Republicans were indeed going to do the thing they promised to do, overrule Roe versus Wade, and therefore did not enact a federal law that protected abortion rights throughout the entire country. You know, they failed to adopt other federal legislation that could have safeguarded other rights that are now in jeopardy as well.
Let's talk about a couple of those fringe theories. I guess the biggest one, it seems to me, well, the two that seem to play the most, one would be the unitary executive theory. Oh, and yeah. And we should note, this is a theory that's been around for 50 years now, almost like transported through time by Dick Cheney, who was chief of staff for, I think, in the Nixon administration. Or was he chief? I think he was. Helped develop this. And then the other one is the major questions doctrine, which is just sort of like get out of jail free card. It's like a wild card that you can just throw down at any time.
Yeah, it's like a trump card that they get to pull against Democratic administrations that say you don't actually get to do things that are authorized by law if we Republican justices and the Republican Party think they're a big deal. It is, as Justice Kagan called it, like a get out of law, get out of text free card that allows the courts to say statutes don't actually mean what they say. You know, the unitary executive theory is just one of the more consequential fringe theories that has just become this insurgent idea that has cannibalized, you know, the Republican views on presidential power and so much of the law. You know, it was really pushed by the Reagan administration, you know, after you say kind of flirted with by the Nixon administration. It maintains that presidents have all of the executive power and therefore have to be able to control everyone in the executive branch, and that they possess some unclear set of additional unspecified powers. You know, that is the idea that the Trump administration is probably relying on to justify the strikes against Iran. That is the legal theory that they have invoked to justify why they can summarily expel people to El Salvador. That is the legal theory they have invoked to allow Donald Trump to fire people like heads of the National Labor Relations Board in violations of federal law. And it is this grossly ideological theory that threatens to upset so much of our constitutional system, because it, in effect, places the president above the law in many different areas. It was channeled by the immunity decision, the catastrophic immunity decision. So, yes, that's another one of their fringe theories that, unfortunately, now seems to have a majority support.
I want to talk about what cases you think are going to be really important that we're going to hear about. I would it could be literally any day now.
Yes.
But let's talk about the one that was decided again in the shadow docket. It is, just briefly remind people what the shadow docket is, how the use of it has changed, and how it changes. What's fascinating about the shadow docket is if you had a graph, you could see its use would be up here from 2016 or so to 2020. Then it's down here, and then it's back up here again in 2024. What? It's an amazing coincidence.
It's totally coincidental. So the shadow docket refers to the set of orders, opinions, and decisions that the Supreme Court issues without full briefing and without oral argument. You know, there are legitimate things that the Supreme Court does on the shadow docket, like deciding, for example, whether the Solicitor General of the United States gets to participate in oral argument. But what has changed over the last 10 years is increasingly the federal government, in particular, when the federal government is led by Donald Trump, asks the Supreme Court for stays, pauses of lower court decisions that rule against the Trump administration. The number of emergency requests on the shadow docket has just, you know, multiplied manyfold, where, you know, between the Bush and Obama administrations, you know, there were something like 8 requests by the federal government over a period of like 16 years. You know, now the Trump administration has made like 40 something requests of the court, not even within the first year of the administration. And the Supreme Court has granted a lot of those requests. So they just, without explanation sometimes, without any advance warning, issue a decision that puts on hold a lower court decision and allows the Trump administration to implement a policy that a lower court has declared illegal.
Ostensibly, the shadow docket was to essentially prevent some type of irreconcilable harm if this was not stopped, right? And it's quite clear from these things that, like, there's no irreconcilable harm if people that you want to deport are not deported today, as opposed to in 4 weeks or 6 weeks or whatever. I mean, you could argue, like, we can't deal with keeping them in a detention center or whatever it is, but that just seems spurious. But I wonder how, like, this rise in the use of the shadow docket. I know that Trump is not getting along with Leonard Leo anymore, or supposedly not. But Leonard Leo has been the fixer for the Supreme Court for decades now. He introduced, when Clarence Thomas was going around telling everybody, I don't think I can stay on the court because I don't have enough money, Leonard Leo introduces him to a billionaire. I can't remember his name now, but... Harlan Crow, his best friend, it's great. You meet people when you're on the Supreme Court and they take care of you. But I've got to imagine that the idea of let's try the shadow docket, this will work, didn't sort of just organically grow. It feels like this must have been a strategy or a tactic that was developed on sort of both ends of whatever street is between the White House and the Supreme Court.
Yeah, it is something where if the Supreme Court actually wanted the Trump administration to knock it off, right, and not be inundated by all of these requests, they would just deny them, right? But they are instead creating this incentive for the Trump administration to continually run off to the Supreme Court because they keep granting a lot of these requests. And indeed, they are granting requests in cases where lower courts found that the Trump administration had not complied, failed to comply with lower court orders. And those are the same orders that the Supreme Court is essentially wiping away and telling the Trump administration, yeah, you don't have to comply with those. No big deal.
That's what just happened in this third-party deportee case. My understanding of the case is that U.S. immigration law says that if you're going to deport a potential deportee to a third country, not the U.S. and not their country of origin, they have an opportunity to have a judge or have the list of countries presented to them, and they can go to a judge and say, I can't get sent to that country because of my background or whatever it is that could be dangerous for me. They went through that process, and there were some countries they couldn't go to, the judge found. And then the Trump administration just added some other countries and didn't give them that due process. Is that basically what the case is about?
No, that's completely right. The Trump administration just trying to shuttle people off to countries where people have never been, might not have even heard of. And when their order of removal didn't tell them, you might have to go to this other country. You know, the United States is a signatory to the Convention Against Torture, which Congress has implemented by legislation. And so if an individual faces a risk of torture, persecution, violence in another country under federal law, they have the legal right, to challenge their removal on that basis and not be deported there. And so what the Trump administration is doing is denying people the ability to raise those challenges because they are just telling people, you know, at 5 p.m. at night, oh, tomorrow morning, you're going to be shipped off to South Sudan. And then the next morning, they put them on a bus and put them on a plane and indeed send them off to the country without notifying them. You can challenge your removal to this country because, again, you were not previously informed that you might be deported there. And some of the places where the Trump administration has attempted to shuttle people off to include Libya, where people are at risk for being trafficked and sold into slavery if they are imprisoned in some of the places where they might have been held.
So the shadow docket basically overturned essentially a federal judge in Boston, I think it was, ruling. What are the implications of this beyond the specifics of this immigration, of this specific immigration scenario?
I think we should read the Supreme Court's order as effectively emboldening and greenlighting the administration's failure to comply with lower court orders because they are not facing any penalty for doing so. Here, the lower court order, the government, you know, did not comply with it at least twice. You know, after the lower court had blocked the administration from carrying out these third country removals without providing people with the notice and an opportunity, the federal government first took some people to Guantanamo Bay and then sent them to El Salvador and argued that they had not violated the court order because the court's order only applied to the Department of Homeland Security. And they put the people on planes by the Department of Defense, right? That is not a good legal argument. Subsequently, they deported people to South Sudan and argued they had complied with the court's order because they had provided them with 16 hours notice overnight, by the way, without informing them of their ability to challenge their impending removal to South Sudan. Again, they were not in compliance. And the Supreme Court is just telling them, you're not going to face any penalty for giving lower courts the middle finger.
What other cases? I mean, that's why it makes me think of the birthright citizenship case.
Yeah.
Because in that case, and correct me if I'm wrong, the issue of birthright citizenship is a second order in terms of the case that the Supreme Court is hearing. The real issue is whether a federal appeals court or circuit court can issue a nationwide injunction, whether there's a subsidiary court to the United, to the Supreme Court can issue a nationwide ruling, essentially sort of barring the Trump administration from stripping the rights of people who have been born in this country from their citizenship. And that's the question.
Yes. So the issue in the case is whether a lower court can issue what's called a nationwide injunction, basically block a policy that is illegal on a nationwide basis. And if the Supreme Court says they can't do so, or if they limit federal court's ability to issue that orders, I think that has the real potential to allow the Trump administration to implement wildly illegal orders, you know, in some Republican-leaning states that are unlikely to challenge some of the Trump administration's illegal conduct, particularly because the Trump administration is taking the astonishing view that if a private plaintiff successfully challenges one of their executive orders in Texas or in the Fifth Circuit, which oversees Texas, they, the federal government, are not obligated to apply that decision to other people. So what would that mean? If one U.S. citizen baby in Texas successfully sues to challenge the birthright citizenship executive order and obtains a decision that says, you indeed are a citizen because this birthright citizenship order is unlawful, the federal government is holding out the possibility of still refusing to recognize the citizenship of other babies in Texas who haven't sued and didn't sue to challenge the order.
I mean, that to me seems like almost definitionally the dissolution of law. Right. I mean, if it's a per person basis, it's like you're in the shtetl and you're just going to the rabbi. And can you make it? Can you decide which one of us owns this donkey? There's no law anymore in that instance. It is just a person by person sort of like determination.
No, that's what Justice Jackson referred to at oral argument in the birthright citizenship as a catch me if you can regime that effectively gives the executive branch the power to opt out of the law, right, and not enforce the Constitution and federal law in cases where they can get away with it.
What other, and we don't know when that's going to be resolved, but it's going to be in the next 2 weeks, probably, maybe in the next
That's when we expect. Traditionally, the Supreme Court issues opinions and argued cases by the end of June, although they have occasionally gone into July as of late.
What other cases are you, that are, where decisions are still extant that you, think will be the most important?
There are a lot of big ones. There's a big case about the future of what remains of the Voting Rights Act and whether it is unconstitutional for states to try to ensure that voters of color have the opportunity to elect the candidate of their choice in districts. There's a case about whether parents have the right to opt out their children from instruction in public schools that includes storybooks with LGBT characters. So those are probably three of the biggest cases that I'm watching for.
We're going to be talking about the Scrimeti case tomorrow with Chase Strangio. Where are we on the Chevron doctrine and non-delegation? These are principles that essentially allow for agencies to follow the spirit of the law, as it were, and execute the law in a way that really only experts could. Where are we on that?
So the Supreme Court overruled the Chevron doctrine last term. That doctrine had allowed agencies to interpret ambiguous, unclear words in the statutes they implement, like the EPA with the Clean Air Act. This term, the Supreme Court has on its docket a case that invites the justices to revive the non-delegation doctrine. That doctrine, which the Supreme Court only enforced in 1935 as the court was invalidating New Deal programs, says there are limits on the extent to which Congress can empower other entities, such as administrative agencies, to write rules and regulations that govern what private citizens can do. Of course, rules and regulations are most of how health, safety, economic, you know, rules and regulations are written today. Agencies are such an essential part of modern governance. You know, Justice Kagan wrote in a dissent that if the non-delegation doctrine is brought back, then most of government is unconstitutional. And so that is another one of the cases we are awaiting a decision on.
Which case is that specific?
That's the Consumers Research decision. It's about the Federal Communication Commission's Universal Service Fund, in which a group determines the amount that different common carriers have to pay in order to fund broadband for rural areas, among other places.
Okay, so I guess lastly, if we have this shared understanding that the Supreme Court is a political entity and that it must be addressed with politics. Do you see any politicians out there who are Democrats who have an appreciation of this? I mean, Biden, to his credit, did a good job of making sure to fill all of the seats that were empty, as opposed to Obama, who left a lot of, like, you know, low-hanging fruit for Donald Trump to really dominate the judiciary. Biden was very, in my opinion, very good in terms of making sure there were nominees and, frankly, having a wide range of nominees that were probably as diverse as any that we've seen in several decades. But are there any politicians? But he was also very adamant in the way that he set up a commission to look at, like, any type of Supreme Court reform to absolutely deep six it. You know, it was dead on arrival.
Yes.
Do you see any politicians out there that have like a better understanding of like the moment we're in and what maybe we're going to need to do if there's an opportunity to do it?
Yes, I think that there are absolutely some, particularly in the House. So Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, you know, in the Senate, Senator Tina Smith, back in the House, Representative Jamie Raskin. I think those are people who have signaled they understand what is going on with the federal courts and understand that sort of structural democratic reforms that are necessary in order to protect our democracy from the United States Supreme Court. There's also actually a former legal journalist who is running for a Republican seat in Congress held by Mike Lawler. This is Mike Sachs. And I think he also very much gets what's happening with the federal courts and the Supreme Court as well.
Leah Littman, the book is Lawless, How Supreme Court Runs on Conservative Grievance, Fringe Theories, and Bad Vibes. We'll put a link to that as well as your podcast at majority.fm and in the YouTube and podcast descriptions. Thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program, wherein we will have fun. We have no updates on voting. Let's see a couple of pictures, though. Do we have a couple of those photographs? Would show you it is right now in New York City. I'm going to check on this. It is a balmy. Let's see here.
I get 98 on my watch.
Well, I have 99. But of course, I would imagine it depends on where you are. It's 97 in Manhattan.
Yeah, you're under the lights.
That's too. In the Seaport area, Group Pier 17, apparently. And that's right by the water. So you get the cool breeze that cools it down to 97.
It's like 108 in South Brooklyn.
Is it really?
I saw one overhead, yeah. It's over 100 in a few places in the city.
Here's a image, and where is this from? Do we know?
This is Astoria.
This is the last day of early voting.
Oh, that's the last day of early voting? Okay, sorry. We don't have, I don't know if we have any updated pictures in terms of lines and whatnot, but look, if you're going out there and you're waiting in line, you know, take some water, stay hydrated. Obviously, it's easier for young people to stand in line.
We got you, old people. You can let us take care of this one for you.
I would hate to see anybody go out there just to prevent Zohran Mamdani from winning the primary and getting heat stroke.
It's not worth it.
It's just not.
We have one image here, actually, which is kind of funny. This is from Chris Sommerfeld of New York Daily News. This is a midtown where one of Andrew Cuomo's staffers is holding a parking spot for him in front of a polling site he's soon expected to vote at. Cuomo is registered to vote a few blocks from here, but is still driving over. Although it looks like he had issued a correction here. Let's see. What does that say? Cuomo actually walked up to the poll with his daughter, but I guess they were just holding that spot for him for some other reason.
Wait. Let's say scroll down because I want to see him walking there.
Mr. Mamdani is half of your age, but do you trust and question his ability to lead?
I trust his experience level. He's never had a real job. He's been a two-term assemblyman who only passed three bills. He's never really been interested in government at all, right?
Oh, that's weird.
He's interested in public relations. And he's very good on social media. He was quoted in the Times when they basically said,
my
him,
God,
well, you don't
Cuomo's aged so much. It just feels like in the last 5 weeks.
Grandpa.
Grandpa, he's very good with the computers. And he, first of all, Cuomo was almost Mamdani's age when he had his first nepotism job in the Clinton administration, I think, as at HUD. Bill Clinton was 35 when he was elected to governor of Arkansas. I also seem to remember that Mario Cuomo, when Andrew turned 50, did not go to his birthday party. I don't know. Sometimes.
Was he visiting the grave of a grad student, a friend of his? Like, that's the only excuse I've heard from the Fetterman thing.
Oh, is that what that was? You know, kids. I got to say, you know, as a parent, sometimes you don't think that your kids turn out the way you want them. So I understand where Mario is coming from. That's all I'm saying. Not my kids. My kids came out perfect. All right. So go vote. Go vote. And listen, if you are in line right now, listening to the show, IM us if you're a member, or call us. And send us on Twitter, at the majority.fm, oh no, excuse me, on Blue Sky. Let's do it on Blue Sky. Let us know that you're, on there. Maybe send it to me actually. Cause I got to get into the Blue Sky. Send it to me and, give me your area code. We'll pull you out of line. So just at me on Blue Sky. All right. Just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only get the free show free of commercials, you get the fun half. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, hot chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. Great company. Oh, wait a second. He pulled away from his polling site. That was interesting. All right. We'll see you in the fun half.
Wait, first. Tonight, Left Reckoning.
Oh, back. Sorry.
Back. Left Reckoning, 7 o'clock Eastern Time, Iskander Sadeghi and Derek Davison talking about Iran. Check that out, patreon.com/Left Reckoning.
3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now. But I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt.
Who?
What is up, everyone? Nomi Keen.
You did it. Let's go, Brandon.
Fun.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women's...
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But, dude, you want to smoke this, 7-8?
Yes.
Yes.
Is it me?
It is you.
Is it me? Hello? Is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? Oh, no sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm going to go for that.
You libertarians.
They're so stupid, though.
Common sense says, of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him!
So, what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say.
857-210-3501. One half. 3-8.
9-11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$3 trillion.
Sold.
It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less.
But let me say this.
Poop.
You can call it satire. Sam goes with satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt.
Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat
is enabled,
wow,
folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock. We're already late, and the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye-bye. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. I'll open up the phones in just a second. Antish and at Nosh Funny. I'm working at a poll site in Brooklyn. The energy for Zohran is great. A lot of people don't know Cuomo pulled out funds from building a public transport directly to LaGuardia during the renovation. If Zohran loses, he should still run in November. He will have more momentum and name recognition. What do you think? I don't think so. I think it's going to be tough.
Crazy to pull out funds for public transportation to LaGuardia, which is the glaring issue with LaGuardia, is it's hard to get there without taking a cab.
Straight from New York. Hey, I'm our crew. I volunteered at a poll site from 6 to 9 a.m. this morning in the Upper East Side. Would love to report on the shocking amount of pro-Zohran sentiment experienced. Area code 810. Nikki Knapps, for 25 years, the last three New York City mayors have run for president and failed miserably. I know you want your trash state party to improve, so you've ignored bias into saying this is national. No. I don't think that this is a national platform to run for president at all. But I can tell you that the way that the party reacts to what happens in New York is pretty dramatic. Michael Bloomberg spoke at the 2016 convention for Hillary Clinton. And he wasn't even a Democrat. He was like an independent, and he just turned Democrat, I think, at that time. Eric Adams was touted as a national candidate. And the template for the way that Democrats should run, be afraid of crime, be somewhat hostile to immigrants.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where that came from.
It's not Springfield, Illinois.
It is
not
City.
Come on, people.
And listen, Springfield, Illinois, wonderful town. All right, let's do number one. The amazing thing about when the U.S. drops bombs, it is as if, like, these bombs are attached to, like, sheets. And it just rips off the cover of so many people in our society. Like, in the first Trump administration, I remember going on, I think it was Hayes' show. And I was on Hayes' show the night that Trump bombed Syria. And it was his first military attack. And every guest, even on Hayes' show at that point, was like, well, this is something that had to happen. And I'm like, wait, what? You trust this guy to start bombing places? Everybody. That's the way they jump. I think I was the only person on that network between the hours of 8 and midnight who came out against it. And it is the same with this. You get to, it is incredibly revealing as to who people are. I don't know if people still have questions about Van Jones, but if you really need an answer, here it is. This is Van Jones 2 days ago on CNN.
He's buying himself some time in some room. I was also in the Holy Land very recently. I think progressives underestimate.
Pause it for a second. He was in the Holy Land very recently?
Who paid for that trip?
Hmm.
Is that just your own miles you used to pay for that trip, Van?
Are you in the anti-Holy Land right now? Like, where are you on the spectrum of being in amongst holiness? Are you in the profane world at the moment? I mean, how are we talking? How is this news analyst talking about geopolitics? I was in the Holy Land.
He's buying himself some time and some room. I was also in the Holy Land very recently. I think progressives underestimate how dangerous Iran is. Iran is not a normal country. Normal countries don't blind women because they showed some hair. They don't empower little gangs and proxies to surround a country and fire rockets and rape people. So,
pause
Iran,
it for a second.
The two things are clear.
Pause it for a second. The Iran regime is very oppressive towards women, without a doubt. I don't know what the geopolitical implications of that are. But should we really be talking about proxies and rape and killing? Because I'm old enough to remember death squads that we funded in Central America. Ones that killed nuns in Central America. I'm old enough to remember when Ronald Reagan's administration sold weapons to Iran, this same country. They used the money to fund essentially right-wing death squads in Central America. But Van is probably a little younger than I am, so maybe he doesn't know about this. But Iran's completely, they're crazy. They're so crazy that they were willing to play off to their domestic constituencies. If we lob six missiles that do nothing against the United States, then it's tit for tat and we're even. Like the restraint that Iran is showing is far more rational than Van Jones going on and think he's fooling anybody with his comments about the Holy Land.
The clip starts, and this was before the strikes, the clip starts with him crediting the two-week pause as Trump trying to get his distance and have some time. And actually, that was just a ruse to surprise Doc.
Empower little gangs and proxies to surround a country and fire rockets and rape people. So Iran, the two things are clear. The what... They cannot have a bomb, and the why, because they say death to America, death to Israel, and death to all the Jews. One of those should offend you if you're progressives. At least one should offend you. And so the question, though, is the who and the how. Is Israel going to take out this nuclear capacity?
Let me explain to you, if you don't speak English, what Van Jones is saying, death to Iran. Go ahead.
It's not a normal country.
Is Israel going to take out this nuclear capacity by dropping people there who blow it up? Or is America going to take it out by dropping a bomb that blows it up?
Pause it for one more second. This profane country that we live in, this non-holy land of America, we have intelligence agencies that would dispute the premise of everything that Van Jones is saying. They do not have a nuclear weapon capacity. They do not have a nuclear weapon program. Good.
The bomb that blows it up. But the what and the why are clear, and I think progressives should get on board with that. We cannot have a nuclear-armed Iran. I was in the region. You were in the region. This is a very dangerous power that cannot get a nuclear weapon. He's buying himself some time.
There it is. Van Jones telling you, get on board the drop bomb on Iran tour. Incidentally, it turns out by all estimates that the dropping the bombs that they did very little. Or at least they don't know. It's all just, it's just a grotesque K-Fab. I mean, the whole thing is just bizarre.
I've been rereading Tony Jett's When the Facts Change, his essays from 1995 to 2010, and there's a bunch on Israel there. One of the interesting ones is the way that they talk about Iran is the same way they used to talk about Egypt before we normalized relations and started recognizing them as a state that we can actually deal with that isn't just bent on anti-Semitic horror.
Of course. Of course. And I mean, it's, we do this, we just cycle through different countries. So last night, was it last night? Donald Trump went on, number three. Donald Trump last night announced that peace had broken out, that he had negotiated a peace deal. With Iran and Israel.
Quite a claim.
Here is Stephen Miller reacting to the historic ceasefire, according to Laura Ingraham's show. Historic. Amazing. Let's name this war, shall we? We have the 6-day war. This one's double. It's the 12-day war.
Twice as good.
Twice as good. Stevie, get out there and sing my praises.
Well, let's just take a moment to think about how historic this moment is and what President Trump has achieved in this 12-day war. Presidents going back to Bill Clinton have said it is the policy of the U.S. government not to allow Iran to have a nuclear weapon. But under every president except Trump, Iran marched closer and closer.
Pause it for 1 second. I want you to listen to this carefully. This is like one of those, like, can you find the problem? Since Bill Clinton was president starting in 1993. It is now, depending on where you are, 2025. Just on the I'm not great at math, but I think that's about 32 years. The typical time that it takes a country to build a nuclear weapon is somewhere around 5 or 6 years. So nobody has done anything about Iran building a nuclear weapon for over 37 years, and yet they still don't have one. Huh.
But under every president except Trump, Iran marched closer and closer to being able to put onto a ballistic missile a nuclear warhead that could take out an entire city. That has been the direction Iran has been going in year after year. President Trump took action flawlessly through the United States military to obliterate Iran's nuclear sites.
That's not
and
true.
To stop them through the use of military force from having a nuclear weapon. It was a bold, courageous action, and it happened without a single leak, without a single solitary service member losing their life. Everyone said, who was a critic of this action, that it would lead to World War III, and instead we have a ceasefire, and instead we have the beginnings of a new era of stability and peace and security in the Middle East. President Trump, once again, has demonstrated that he alone has the wisdom, the judgment, the strength, and the courage to see this nation through the most dangerous challenges we face around the world.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, I give you Donald Trump. Probably about 12 hours later, leaving to go to NATO, responding to the fact that Israel said Iran tried to bomb them, and so they started to bomb Iran again. It's unclear whether Iran actually did try and send missiles over there. I'm sure Israel wouldn't lie about something like that. But here's Donald Trump 12 hours later. All those visions of Stephen Miller singing his praise, still dancing in his head. And then this.
Israel says that Iran violated the peace agreement and the ceasefire agreement. Do you believe that Iran is still committed to the peace?
Yeah, I do. They violated it, but Israel violated it too.
Are you questioning if Israel is committed?
Israel, as soon as we made the deal, they came out and they dropped a load of bombs, the likes of which I'd never seen before. The biggest load that we've seen. I'm not happy with Israel. You know, when I say, okay, now you have 12 hours, you don't go out in the first hour and just drop everything you have on them. So I'm not happy with them. I'm not happy with Iran either. But I'm really unhappy if Israel's going out this morning because of one rocket that didn't land, that was shot, perhaps by mistake, that didn't land. I'm not happy about
Pause
that.
Pause it for 1 second, and then we just go back. And narrator, this is where you put the narrator in. This is what the kids would do on social media. Narrator, colon, they did drop those bombs. And they were, of course, reacting to something that was semi-fictitious. So Donald Trump seems to be mad because yesterday he had a surefire Nobel Peace Prize in his pocket.
I mean, a peace agreement between Iran and Israel would probably be worth that.
Flawless, flawless, says Stephen Miller. But Trump's still mad. So go back to that because we got more in that that clip. It gets even a little juicier, Matt. You've never heard this, apparently. Here is Donald Trump. He gets a little bit testy because remember now, he wants that Nobel Peace Prize because Obama got one and he never got one.
Now you have 12 hours. You don't go out in the first hour and just drop everything you have on them. So I'm not happy with them. I'm not happy with Iran either. But I'm really unhappy if Israel's going out this morning because of one rocket that didn't land, that was shot, perhaps by mistake, that didn't land. I'm not happy about that. You know what? We basically have two countries that have been fighting so long and so hard that they don't know what the fuck they're doing. Do you understand that?
He walks away.
Ooh, he swore. He's angry. He is angry. I would suggest that there may be a third party involved in all this who doesn't know what the F they're doing.
The one that's helping maybe one of the other countries with the intelligence and bombs?
Yes. The one who got completely rolled. Story in the Washington Post today. Bibi Netanyahu has been planning this attack on Iran since March. As was speculated on this program yesterday. I think when they start going after Hezbollah completely, despite Hezbollah's restraint, the ongoing attacks in Gaza, when they go into deep into Syria, I think it became somewhat obvious. Now, I will say it is a challenge to cover the news with Donald Trump. Obviously, we had to do some late-breaking guests switches yesterday. Then we pull some clips. Brian pulled some clips based upon the ceasefire. Well, first it was the war, then it was the ceasefire. Then this morning, there's no ceasefire. Very difficult to follow the news. It's especially difficult if you are attempting to cheer on what the president is doing. Because at any given moment, the president could be doing something different. And if your only North Star is to care less about what actually is done, but more about that Trump is doing it. In other words, if you're a boot-licking sycophant, this becomes harder and more of a challenge. Because you don't subscribe to any rational thing. It is all kayfabe and pretending for you. And you have to keep doing these backflips. So which number is this?
This is two months ago. We have Can We Disarm Iran from Charlie Kirk's YouTube.
This is 2 months ago. Charlie Kirk.
Because while Iran should not have a nuclear weapon, going to war with Iran would be catastrophic. Going to war with Iran would be a dreadful mistake, and that includes American military strikes on the interior of Iran.
I need you guys to explain this to me. We don't want Iran to have a nuclear weapon, but it would be catastrophic for America to strike within Iran.
Even strike, yep.
Okay, but this clip is back from 1997, when is it?
This is from a specifically, let's see, April 18th, 2020.
April, May.
Of this year.
June. Okay. So 2 months ago. All right.
American military strikes on the interior of Iran. Two things can simultaneously be true. We need to exert maximum leverage while also saying we are not going to go to war with Iran. Doesn't matter if Tom Cotton wants it. Doesn't matter if Lindsey Graham wants it. It doesn't matter if all the U.S. senators and the deep state cabal wants it. We will clearly say we are against a war with Iran. Let's play first.
But wait a second, Charlie. What if Daddy says it? What will you say if Daddy says it? And here is Charlie Kirk 2 days ago.
So I'd say the emails are about 50-50 right now, support and oppose. Now, if you email me, freedom@charliekirk.com, I want to hear from you. Please include your age. I'm curious if the age has any determining factor of whether you support or oppose this. And you might say, Charlie, do you support or oppose this? I support President Trump. That's my answer. I know the man. He's the commander-in-chief. He's the man for the hour. And he's had the weight of the world on his shoulders. So in a situation like this, I support my friend, and he's had my back and I have his.
Good boy, Charlie. And let's be honest, you're not supporting my back. You're licking my dirty little boot.
Yeah.
Good boy.
Lick the loafers, Charlie.
Good boy, Charlie.
Like I stepped in.
Look how easy that was. Wasn't that easy? Look at what you said 2 months ago today. It's all over. Good boy, Charlie. Good boy, Charlie.
That's a good boy.
That's a good boy. Who wants a treat? Do you want a treat?
We'll pay for some more hotels and college.
Do you want a treat now? You're going to get to go to a big college and have a big debate with somebody.
Stick to abortion, Charlie, okay?
There you go.
Foreign affairs.
Good boy. Good boy.
So we're not friends. I don't know what else to say.
I don't like you that much. You're a good boy, but come on. Wow. Dude's making a lot of money to embarrass himself like that.
Principles. Ideas.
First principles. Debate. That's what they always love to say. First principles.
Because he mentioned the email thing. If the email's 50-50, I'll be surprised, because his Twitter was 90-10 against supporting Israel striking Iran.
His Twitter was?
He did a Twitter poll, and it was 89.3%.
I bet you email may be different, because he's probably got an older audience, and that's what he's talking about.
The chain emails, yeah.
Folks, the number is 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. We will take your phone calls. Now, calling from a 414 area code. Who's this?
Oh, I suppose this is the part where I ask if it's me.
It is you. Well done.
Oh, perfect. My name is Jason. I'm actually calling from the North Chicago area.
Jason,
I am
the North Chicago area.
Yes, sir. I am an 18-year current active duty military member, and I have some opinions.
Tell.
Yeah, so let me disarm you now that I primed you. Left is best. We're on the same team.
All right.
So it's been very, very hard for me recently. Just watching everything, having to walk by the pictures of those three goons every day. It looks so evil. President, Vice President, Hegseth.
Okay.
Although he's probably getting bounced soon, but I'm sure they'll replace him with someone even more horrible. Yeah, it's been a lot of upheaval, things changing a lot, and I really do feel like a man on an island sometimes, watching my fellow military members even get deployed against civilians. It's been very hard. I'm in a position where I don't think that's going to happen to me, but I don't know, I just...
What is the sense of... What service are you in, can I ask? I mean, I know you probably don't want to say too much.
I'm in the Navy.
Okay.
So... My seagoing brothers and sisters are really going to feel this one in the Middle East out there. Longer deployments, harder days, very stressful environment. So, And then watching everything that's happening back home, I mean, so my wife is also Mexican, so I kind of worry about her family back in California. And just seeing what could happen there, and just the fact that I feel that there's no loyalty to anything because they don't care about us, and that they would just as soon turn my own brothers and sisters against me without a second thought if I just try to protect that side of my family.
What what are your fellow sea people? What do you call the service member? Well, but what do you call it? Sailors? Oh yeah, sailors. What are your fellow sailors say?
So, it's kind of a mixed bag, but being military, it leans very heavily conservative.
Right.
So, I mean, there's a few places where I can kind of let loose, but a lot of times I find myself listening to people and I'm like, I got to find a reason to leave the room just because it's not worth having that fight, especially at work.
Right. I can see that. And are people not concerned about what's happening with senior leadership, or is it just a sense of like, it's really not our business. You know, ours is not to ask why type of thing.
Little column A, little column B. Some people definitely have more opinions. I know there's a lot of people that are fans of what's going on. Like when we lost to CNO Admiral Franchetti, I was disappointed, obviously. But there's a lot of people that, you know, same buzzwords, woke agenda, this and that, and whatnot. And again, it's all really annoying because they're not, none of these decisions are actually helping us, and especially not on the ground. I mean, I've been to Iraq and Afghanistan throughout my career, seen those places, and nothing's ever been made better by these types of changes.
Yeah. And are you deployed now? Or are you?
No, I'm okay. Actually on shore duty, so I'm working at the Navy boot camp, actually. I'm a drill instructor, for layman's terms.
Okay. And I guess a lot of folks have been deployed to Strait of Hormuz and are out in the outskirts there and are on alert at this point.
Absolutely. Pretty much anyone who's been on an aircraft carrier, even the small boys at sport, we all go out there. When I was stationed in Virginia, we were out there for 8 months.
Wow. Well, I appreciate the call. I imagine you feel somewhat isolated, like you say, and I suspect that there's probably more folks in all of the services who feel the way you do, but it's probably difficult to know when you're amongst those people, I would imagine. So you play it close to the vest.
Yeah, you get little clues here and there, just having normal conversations with people. So we do get somewhat of an outlet sometimes, but by and large, just put up with it. I'm getting my check soon for that retirement, and I just feel like, to me, it's a shame that this is the situation I'm going to wrap my career up with.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me about it. This is not where 20 years into this tour of duty here is not exactly where I want it to be. I thought we would be in better shape, but hope springs eternal. Maybe what we need to do is put out like some type of majority report merch that is super like, patriotic looking, and as a way of just sort of like signaling to other service members that you listen to the majority report, because I think it's not that obvious from the name if people don't know it.
That would be a pretty good psyop. I think you can win back the hearts and minds, hopefully.
I think we got to do that one. Maybe one of those trucker caps with the U.S. flag and a majority report on the side, something like that. All right. Well, hang in there, man. Appreciate the call.
Yes, sir. You have a good one, Sam. Appreciate everything you do.
All right. Thanks.
I know somebody who's a nurse and one of their coworkers is getting deployed. They're going to be taking some time off, caring for people here to go, I don't know, be in missiles, way in Qatar or something.
Insane. Hey, you know who's a great prognosticator? Tim Pool. let's check in with Tim Pool at least a week ago, who was assuring us that Donald Trump could not be swayed by Israel, that Donald Trump was so principled in terms of anti-war that he was not going to in any way attack Iran. Now, it may have come back around on some level. We just saw Donald Trump swear about Israel and Iran. It really just depends who's on Fox that day, I think, is really what it comes down to. But here's Tim Pool. Anticipating that Trump, this is from just June 22nd. This is from 2 days ago. Is this number seven? Oh, somebody posted it at June 22nd. Okay.
It's like not
following
even
the news.
Huh?
Have you been following the news on this one?
Yeah.
He recently came out and told Israel he was breaking from them. He doesn't want to be involved in their wars.
Do you remember why?
Iran.
What do you mean, Iran?
To avoid a war.
To avoid a war with Iran, he said, we're going to stop supporting you because you're pushing too hard. Israel said they're going to engage in strikes on Iran's nuclear facilities. And Tulsi Gabbard told Trump, don't do it. And Trump said, we won't. Tulsi Gabbard was excellent, excellent choice. Man, if we got Kamala Harris in there, holy
shit. And another, pause it for 1 second. I'm sorry.
That's not right. We agreed on Tulsi.
None of that even happened at that time. No. Listen. Nobody's a fortune. No one could see in the future. But Tulsi Gabbard came out and said in front of Congress, we have no intel. In fact, our intel says that the Iranians have not restarted their weapons, their nuclear weapon program since 2003. And she was literally locked out of the room for days when they were talking about what was going on in Israel and whether they would strike Iran. So where did Tim Pool get that information?
Because the media I think he's referring to is her being confirmed and saying the thing that we all know about the state of the intelligence.
Put it back up. And let's put this back up there. He's convinced he knows what was going on. He not only did he not know what was going on a week from the time that he said this, he didn't know what was going on the day that he said this.
For why?
Iran.
What do you mean, Iran?
To avoid a war.
To avoid a war with Iran, he said, we're going to stop supporting you because you're pushing too hard. Israel said they're going to engage in strikes on Iran's nuclear facilities. And Tulsi Gabbard told Trump, don't do it. And Trump said, we won't. Tulsi Gabbard was excellent, excellent choice. Man, if we got Kamala Harris in there, holy shit.
And another.
Holy crap. Can you imagine? We probably bomb Iran.
Probably send some B-52s over there.
I mean, who knows? We probably have to, if you are a sailor, you'd probably have to deploy. You'd be on high alert.
I got to see what he's saying today.
Let's go back to the phones. Calling from a 917 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hello, this is Alex from New York.
Alex in New York. What's on your mind, Alex? Were you the one who skeeted at me? What do we call that? Blue skied me?
Yes, I did skeet
okay,
at you.
Okay. I had a.
I skeeted at your heart.
Okay.
I just wanted to give a. I just wanted
Excuse
to give
me?
A little vibe check for New York. It's hot out there.
Yeah.
Everyone, drink some water. Bring some water with you. Went to Brooklyn. Got our dog a haircut. Voted. Or my fiance voted, got back to Manhattan. I voted. Energy's good. I saw some Zoran canvassers with a little table out there in McCarran Park. A couple in Manhattan. People are out. They're voting. I'm seeing a lot of I voted stickers.
Interesting. Awesome.
Yeah. And we'll also see. Wanted to plug this space at 6 p.m. tonight. We're doing live election coverage, and I'm hosting it with Christina from Cosmopolitics.
Okay, great. What is the space?
This space is started by Letterhack.
Okay, great. We're gonna have.
We've been going like for about 2 weeks now.
I just emailed with Matt and spoke to Ben the other day. We're gonna have them on to talk about it. But this space, where can people find it? This space on YouTube.
It's on on YouTube, and we've done it for 2 weeks now. We started. We're going strong. This is week three. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursdays. Their plan is to get it to 24/7, pretty much.
24/7.
And Matt and Ben will tell you about it when they go on. But we're live. So tonight, 6 p.m. Eastern, election coverage all night. Hopefully it gets called tonight, but we shall see.
All right. Appreciate the call.
All right. Thank you so much, guys. Right. Left is best.
Left is best.
I got one of your masks.
Say masks, I think, maybe.
Emma's Danish auntie. Say their name, Sam. Say semen. Look, I don't have a problem saying semen, but I just didn't want to exclude women who may be sea people. That's why I said sea people.
Sounds like he's talking about mermaids or something.
Chuck Frolic, could someone please explain to Sam what a skeet is? All right. I clearly have stepped in it again. Look. I didn't know. Calling from a 908 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from? 908.
Hello. This is Hillary calling from Brooklyn.
Hillary in Brooklyn. What's on your mind, Hillary?
So I've been out at the polls since about 7 a.m. this morning.
Yeah.
And volunteering for Zohran. The energy has been really good, having a lot of positive feedback from people. I'm right near my building, which is near my poll site, so I'm kind of catching all my neighbors walking by. There's a very surprising amount of people who responded to me, stopping them by saying, oh, that's today? So it's been really great to be out there because there's just tons of people who are kind of zoned out, and then you hand them a Zohran flyer and they walk straight to the polls and vote.
I mean, this is the thing that I think, like, we cannot overestimate. A primary in the middle of June, or at the end of June. First off, if you have kids and your kids are in public school, you are completely frenzied right now because you're either thinking about camp starts next week or what are we going to get done? Or there's a permission form. This is June and September are difficult months and any type of transition with the kids. So you're not paying attention to that. Maybe it's just summer and you're just like, man, it's so hot. All I'm doing is going out and drinking. all I can think about is going out and, it is so few people know about this. Even people who are sort of like would self-identify as being sort of like politically aware, they don't know.
Yep, absolutely.
They just don't know.
And I've looked up a couple people's, made sure they're registered right on the spot, confirmed their poll site. And tons of people were just like, all right, I'll stop by the church before going to work. And then letting people know that the polls are open until 9 because a couple people said I have to go to work. And then they said they'll vote later. A lot of people that are interested were handing out the working families party sort of slate suggestions because a lot of people are kind of going in there, maybe voting for Zohran, but don't really know about anyone else. We've been informing them to fill out all 5 if they can and not to rank Cuomo. And there's a lot of really good no Cuomo energy out there. I'm in central Brooklyn in Flatbush. And,
I mean,
there's
Brooklyn,
a lot of older people that live around me.
Brooklyn is going to go overwhelmingly, I think, for Zohran. I think, broadly speaking, but, so Brooklyn it's tough to get an assessment and using Brooklyn as the template. But the more it can be run up in Brooklyn, the better. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, thanks. Take care.
I saw something that trash collections dip the most in the upper sides of Manhattan because rich people, frankly, leave the city in the summer.
Yep.
Just not here.
Emmy in Seattle. Am I shadow banned? I need to rethink my subscription, which really sucks because you guys are my fave. You are not shadow banned. I don't even know what that means. How would someone be shadow banned in the... Hi, MR. Why does it say you're not taking calls? Because we are filled up. Is it an open primary or just Democrats? It's just Democrats. I don't think there's an open primary. I think you could register up until...
A couple days ago.
Yeah.
Last week, I think.
Just getting this. Voters who are recently changed or updated their address or party affiliation are not in the voting system. It seems the information from the BOE, the Board of Elections, was not updated with the most recent information. Many people do not show up in the poll pad at all or are listed as no contest, with both situations leading to an affidavit or being turned away, even though they can prove their voter registration on their phone. The BOE has been called several times and not providing much help or clarity. Fill out the affidavit ballot. Always fill out the affidavit ballot, no matter what. The party affiliation due date was February 14th.
Oh, right, because I remember he did that ad saying, yeah. Look, I know you don't like the Democrats, but...
New registration address was 614. So, let's see here.
I just want to put up this real quick. This is from America's Hunters and Anglers. They apparently did a direct action. Doug Burgum, I'm not sure where this is, but they put up on the hotel he was staying at. Public lands, Burgum by Burgle, Burgled by Burgum, and then coming soon for sale, the highest bidder, to public lands near you. Doug Burgum is very close associates with Bill Gates, owner of probably the single largest owner of farmland or wildlands in the United States. And Doug Burgum is a billionaire because of selling a company to Bill Gates.
Never hurts. Let's just take a moment to praise a great American. I think she's an owner of a car wash in Torrance, California. And apparently some ICE thugs. And we don't know who these guys are. You can go buy most of this gear at the Army Navy store. This is great. I don't know. Is this a bystander, I guess? Or it's unclear to me who it is. But they're going in and harassing guys working at car wash. And let's be clear. Every time you see these images of ICE going into work sites, it should be a clue to you that these immigrants are working. That's why they go to work sites.
Not, shoveling drugs to elementary schools.
I've heard a story of ICE going on to private property where there's people working on building a house dressed as construction workers. You know, with tool belts on and rounding up guys. Oh, this says the KTOA says it's the owner of the car wash. Okay, this is great. And good for her.
No tiene que contestar nada. No tiene que contestar nada.
You don't have to answer anything.
Oh, yeah, I'll read those. Yeah. What are you guys doing? You don't have to answer anything.
Hey. Okay, you need to identify yourselves. You need to identify yourselves. No, you need to identify yourselves. This is kidnap. This is kidnap. You need to fucking identify yourselves. You identify. Identify yourselves. What's your batch number?
I identify myself to him. I'm talking to him. I'm not talking to you.
No.
Now, pause it for one second. My understanding is once these guys come on private property, They need to show a judicial warrant. If you're in public, on public property, they don't need to show a judicial warrant. But if to enter into your premises, they need to have a warrant, and it needs to be signed by a judge. It needs to say Judge Jones or whatever the judge's name. You need to see that warrant. Sometimes they'll hold up an administrative warrant signed by an ICE agent. That is not enough for them to enter private property. Go ahead.
We didn't see any of that shit. We didn't see any of that. No, no tiene que contestar ninguna pregunta.
Don't answer any questions. Did they identify themselves?
Okay.
Okay.
Mi madre, no conteste nada. No conteste nada.
Don't answer anything.
Ni firme nada.
I confirm nothing.
Why don't you question me? You guys are not even ICE. You need to identify yourselves. You're just nothing but fucking bounty.
Ma'am, this is an immigration inspection.
Can I see your badge, please?
My badge is right here.
No, I don't see it.
Yeah, it's right there.
No, I need to see it. No, this is kidnap.
Listen,
this is kidnap.
No.
This is kidnap.
This is an immigration inspection.
This is a kidnap.
You can record all you want. Just please stay out of the way so you're safe, okay?
I am staying out of the way, but it is also my right to record.
I think it's also her right, if she is the owner of this property, to say, get off my property.
And you can see the way they stand at the sort of door of it. Like, they almost know. It's like vampires needing to be invited in, sort of thing. The other guy was doing that.
So this is fucking kidnap. Because you guys just show up and you do not identify yourself. So they don't have to go. They don't have to go with you guys. Do you identify yourselves?
Oh, yeah, I just identified.
I need to see the badge.
Oh, no, my badge.
No, that is not your badge.
It is.
It's not your badge. You know what? I do have a little bit of education, and I know that that is not your badge. That is not your badge.
I think you can hear the maybe somebody
so
else. I don't know if it's the owner yelling at them to get out. And they do seem to be holding right at that threshold.
Which I imagine the driveway is probably private property too, but.
Must be really cold out in LA. That's why they've got to wear those ski masks. What a bunch of cowards.
It's like ICE with freaking out of shape, fat asses.
I was just going to say they're going to go to the drive thru, get some shake, and try to shake down some other workers.
I am not in favor of fat shaming.
Racial
but
profiling is against the law, you motherfuckers. Get the fuck out of here, assholes.
Yeah, they got a massive camera. I wonder what that's for.
Cartel? What's going on?
No, these are not even ICE. These are not ICE. These are fucking bounty hunters. Fuck them, assholes.
I mean, it's unclear, you know, what's going on there. I'm not in favor of fat shaming, but I do appreciate any mechanism that you can deploy to shame any of these people at any time about anything.
Or about signaling that they're worthy of disrespect.
Exactly. Exactly. Very important. You know that story I just told earlier about construction guys, not construction, but they were construction, but doing like home renovation. And it was about 30 guys working on a job site. And ICE came up and dressed as if they were also construction workers with like belts. You know, everybody knows what the construction belt looks like, right?
Yep.
Got the hammer loop.
Tape measure.
Tape measure. Construction hat. And they arrested like 30, or they detained, I mean, they grabbed 30 of these workers. This story I heard from a friend who knows one of the foremen. And it was at a very high-end house in Hollywood of a celebrity. And that kind of news travels through circles. And I suspect those circles are even wide enough to reach all the way from Hollywood to Austin, Texas, where a huge stoner has a podcast.
ICE raids are fucking nuts, man. Watching this protest on television, it's like...
Do you think the raids are nuts? Or the protests.
Yeah, I think both sides are taking it a little too hard.
Pause it. Both sides are taking it a little too hard. One side...
Edgy comedian.
One side has... Yeah. The side that has all the guns and the government power behind them and is just sweeping in and ripping families apart, going a little far. And then the other people who are sometimes blocking traffic, that's also a problem.
Watching this protest on television, it's like...
Do you think the raids are nuts? Yeah.
Yeah, I think both sides are taking it a little too hard.
I don't think the Trump administration, if they're running and they said, we're going to go to Home Depot and we're going to arrest all the people at Home Depot, we're going to go to construction sites and we're going to just like tackle people.
Construction sites.
I don't think anybody would have signed up for that. They said, we're going to get rid of the criminals and the gang members first, right? And now we're seeing like Home Depots get raided. That's crazy. ICE raids are.
Yeah. It's also sort of crazy that anybody who spends any time following the news would buy into that.
Insane. I mean, Steven Crowder used to do constant, look at us go to Home Depot and pointing a camera at day laborers sort of material.
Donald Trump implied on literally the day he announced that he was running for president that a plurality, if not a majority, of Mexicans in this country were rapists.
Yep, some good people, I say.
No, some. I'm sure some.
Like one or two.
I'm sure. Listen, they're not all rapists. Not all. Hashtag, they're not all rapists. But, I mean,
And if you cared about the whole, we have too many immigrant criminals here, guess what? The previous administrations were all prioritizing them for deportation this entire time.
Yes, do 10 minutes of, like, not even 10 minutes. Just go use AI from all the guys who've come into your studio making billions of dollars from it. My God. Or just the guy that Spotify made you hire to check things.
AI, did Obama deport criminals? Yes, this is Google AI. I wouldn't normally use it, but yes, the Obama administration deported individuals convicted of crimes. In fact, placed high priority on removing those who posed a threat to national security or public safety. Wow.
Do you come from a different planet, Matt? How did you access this information?
The AI actually accurately summarized all the things, every news article about that wasn't from like the criminal hysteria post would talk about it.
Are you from some distant time in the future?
Not that I know of.
Wow. Crazy. That's crazy.
Both sides. Those are guys from the Legion of Skanks podcast, which I'm
is
not.
Is that who it is?
And I'm like, I don't know much about them, but I thought they were.
Is that thing
to be like,
still going on?
I guess.
That's been going on for years and years, right?
Maybe a little bit past its prime, if that's the edgy comic take, is both sides going a little bit too crazy on this.
Which side are the skanks on? I don't know.
Also, another comedian in their circle, Ari Shaffir, literally did a YouTube prank where he got Mexicans or Latinos out of a parking lot and deported them in a truck as a prank years ago. called The Amazing Racist.
Well, I didn't realize that the Trump administration would do that, too. That's crazy.
This is crazy.
Can't believe that.
I'd say it's fucked up. That's what I'd say.
Dude, you must be some type of edgy comedian.
Too edgy for Rogan.
Oh, they got comedies legal again. Clowns to the left of me, jokes to the right. It's the Joe Rogan experience. Call from a 240 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hello. Hi. I'm not giving my name for reasons that'll make sense in a second. I'm actually in New York. I'm sorry, we're doing an Oops All New York right now, but I want to bring attention to something really important. I'm not in New York City, although I have been helping with the Zoran campaign. We have folks out in Lower Hudson Valley, right? So think Westchester County, Yonkers, et cetera, who are being ignored because we're all focused on New York City, which is fine, and ICE raids there. In the chaos of the politics of the moment, there have been a significant increase in ICE raids that are not being reported out here in the rest of the state. And Lower Hudson Valley and Greater Hudson Valley areas are full of long-established immigrant families, people who provide the services that New York City residents use because y'all don't produce a lot in the city, right? Who also need aid, attention. We have chapters and coalitions. I'm very tired. And I've just heard, need to bring attention to the fact that the rest of New York is also under attack right now.
Yeah, I heard that. I heard the other day, I can't remember where I read it, but that some ICE were driven out of like Beacon and Poughkeepsie and were headed down to Kingston at one point. All I can say, I mean, as far as what we can do is if there are websites or apps that people are using to alert people, people should tell us about them and we will repeat what those websites are so you can tell folks in your community, whatnot. I think it's, you know, it's a tricky thing because on one hand, I want to say put up flyers with like a QR code so that people can get those apps. But ICE is going to smarten up. Is going to smarten up at one point, and they're going to start putting up their own flyers with QR codes that are going to basically help track people. That's what I worry about with that. But
I hate to break it to you, they kind of already are out here. We've been putting up flyers to let people know their legal rights and how to identify what a proper warrant looks like in this state. And we've realized that they are infiltrating those spaces and using the QR codes that we're putting out for people to track us. We've had to, like, completely trash entire, like, neighborhood, just normal group chats. And not just, like, from feds. Like, these are people who just literally want us to be gone and to not exist here, who are going out of their way to make those spaces unusable the moment we make them more public. So, I mean, on my end, I'm just trying to figure out how do we reach people, A, in a surveillance state, and B, when, you know, our fellow neighbors are rooting for the destruction of their own neighborhoods.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. I mean, social media channels, I guess, at least to let people know that ICE is in the neighborhood. But listen, if you have video, send us video.
Will do.
Send us video. We'll play the video. And if anybody's confronting ICE, if ICE is rolling up on people, send us the video. We will play it. The more that stuff gets out there, the more people see how barbaric this stuff is, the better. And the more, I think a lot of these guys don't feel shame. But, you know, we can still try. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, I mean, thank you so much.
Appreciate the work you're doing, too. Thank you. The Baileys, 4D chess. Our beloved Chuck is playing against Donald. Must be going according to plan. Iranian side deal, which was load of bull, is no longer on the table. Stay winning, Democrats. Ryan from Rochester. I've seen videos of people in Rochester getting taken by ICE. It is a bad way. In as bad a ways as you could see anywhere, breaking into cars, dragging people out. Our protests aren't doing much but making people aware and helping people vent. I think we all need to take the streets, highways, and public safety buildings again like back in 2020. Really cool. Can almost guarantee we won't have final election results tonight. RCV is still plus, will likely be contested if no candidate goes to, is still new. Plus, will likely be contested if no candidate goes to at least 51%. Is that the case? Do you need to win? By the eighth round, you will get to 50%. Isn't that the whole point? They keep going until it's 50%. I'm pretty sure. Jim from PA, I spotted near Hershey Park in Pennsylvania. Sabrata, have you ever wondered what the ICE guys are all about? I mean, gangs of angry white men who enthusiastically persecute and torment and torture people and don't end up in jail for it. These people are stone cold psychopaths. People who aren't employed by the federal government and pull that kind of shit off and end up incarcerated for decades. I think a lot of these people are correctional officers. Snarkorski, both sides is like one step away from Seinfeld era observations comedy. What's the deal with both sides?
It's funny to say, yeah, the government shouldn't be kidnapping just fathers who are weed whacking from Home Depot. But also the community that sees those people disappeared to God knows where should really, you know, mind their manners a little bit, not get too excited about it.
Apparently, we have over 4,000 viewers on Twitch. I just want to say poggers to people. Is that the case?
Must have got a raid. Go to Twitch, the Twitch tab.
Is that poggers?
That's definitely poggers.
Appreciate it.
Done about 2,600 now, but thanks to whoever raided us.
Okay.
Who raided us, chat?
Don't know who it was. Don't know if we had a hype train going. And don't know if you threw us some primes.
Nobody rated us. We just roll like that these days. Holy smokes.
Do you see what I'm talking about in terms of me picking up the jargon too? I said
sorry for saying that.
Somebody threw feel free to throw us some primes. Calling from a 443 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Alex from Baltimore.
Alex from Baltimore, what's on your mind?
So I just wanted to talk about, like, I guess young men. It's kind of like off topic right now, but I just finished school or like finished college. And like, first of all, I want to say like the recession is already hitting like young people just in general. Like all my friends cannot find jobs at all. Like I saw one friend apply to like at least 100 different positions. 3.7, great comp sci, like, school, great comp sci degree, couldn't find anything. And then, like, second of all, I was, like, in these circles where, like, I guess it would be, like, the new Republican voter base, like, young guys in, like, Greek life who are, like, poisoned, I guess, against, like, the left a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think there's like a few different ways to reach them. And like, I didn't like talking politics around them because it's like, it's just too much. Like, you know, they're so like poisoned against like anything that's like kind of like left wing. But then like somebody will go on their like favorite podcast of the week and they'll be like, wow, that was really cool. Or like, this Bernie Sanders guy, he has some cool things to say.
Sanders is on Rogan today, I think.
Really?
I think somebody said that in the chat. I'm not sure.
But it's like, when you went on like Andrew Schultz, I heard like a bunch of people talking about it who like normally don't like talk about like anything in politics except for like, I don't know, like women bad or like ICE raids good or something like that. But it's just like, the capitulation to fascism due to like the fact that there's no kind of counter messaging and just like everything is going wrong for people my age. Like you cannot find jobs right now. And like
I'm talking about people that are like looking and have like really good GPAs and cannot find a thing.
Wait, what's your name again?
Alex.
Alex, what do you account for? Do you think it was just that there's not been a concerted effort to counter these narratives? Do you think that's what it is?
I think that's definitely like a large part of it. I think that like that for sure is part of it. And then obviously like you guys have talked about, like the podcast space like capitulates to right wing framing a lot. But there's definitely like a kind of hunger for like class politics. I know this kind of sounds like obvious in a sense, but like there's definitely a hunger for like class politics amongst like younger people, people my age. Just that, like, because you can see if you're a young guy who's not even into politics, you can just see just how bad things are getting around you, and just like the fact that, like, I don't know, like we were sold like comp sci, go into comp sci, like you're gonna get these jobs, and then you finish and there's nothing available, and it
computer science. Computer science is what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, comp sci, sorry, okay. Sorry, yeah. Yeah.
When I went to college, there was no computer science. So that's, oh, okay. So you got to just, you're talking to grandpa here.
Sorry.
I mean, what are they, do your friends have any idea as to like why those jobs aren't there? Or is it like AI stuff, or is it just people aren't hiring new people, I would imagine, at this point?
So, yeah, it's a couple of things. It's AI has taken a lot of comp sci jobs, but also like it's the fact that like outsourcing, like you can cheaply outsource some comp sci positions, like to people who will do it for like a lot less than what you're asking for, and then I think just like oversaturation, like I think the fact is like when I was in high school, which was 4 years ago now, we were being told like, going into school, like computer science is a great degree for the future because everybody's going to need it.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of like oversaturated, I think.
Yeah, that's what happens.
And because why? It wasn't because people came around and said, what do we need the most of? It's beside the people who came around were the capitalists, said we need cheaper computer scientists and we'll get them one way or the other. And we'll, you know, encourage and we'll distort what the meaning of a good life is toward that end. We have no idea, like, how to remove these things from just the lies that are motivated by what, say, Apple or Google or Facebook need at a given moment. And we got sold their needs as what our desires should be.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And that's 100% part of it. But I think it's just like, yeah, like, I mean, as we were growing up, computer science was big, and then just getting, So that not working out like poisoned kind of a lot of young people against like democracy, for like lack of a better term. And then like just constant right wing framing on everything has just led to this like festering in college, which is supposed to be like a left wing institution, into just a lot. Now, given I was in Greek life, so like a lot of people, it's going to be different than the majority of college, but like it's pretty big. And a lot of these people just fell into the framing because there's nobody's offering an alternative,
or the alternative is muted and censored and, you know, kicked off CNN basically.
Exactly. And like the one thing I've seen that, like, surprisingly, and like this could be due to anti-Semitism, but like a lot of young people, and like even the conservative like irony killed people in college, in Greek life, were still very anti-Israel, or like going to war with Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be an issue to get in there.
Appreciate the call. Interesting. No problem. Thanks, man. Good luck. Yep. Good luck out there. Snarkorski, computer science jobs, the capitalists will also say we need to bring in a lot of people from China and South Asia to work on work visas to undercut the labor market.
Yeah, both Trump and Elon agree on that. Don't make them citizens.
Andrew from D.C., Google the hidden time bomb in the tax code that's fueling the mass tech layoff. I will do that. Right. I'll do that, and I will read it later. Travis from Pittsburgh. I graduated 2016 with an engineering degree. It took me 300 plus applications and me taking a job when I was overqualified for and made $16 an hour. All companies want to get experienced people for cheap, but will not train any new people, hence the entry-level job needing 3 years experience meme. Andrew from D.C., IRS changed the tax code and software development jobs aren't cheap anymore. They used to be able to deduct software development jobs as research positions for almost 70 years. American companies could deduct 100% of qualified research and development spending in the year they incurred the costs. Salaries, software, contractor payments, if contributed to creating, improving a product, came off the top of a firm's taxable income. That changed this year. Comp sci jobs are screwed by the TCGA. It used to be a tax write-off to hire R&D and could be a tax write-off for that year. As of 2022, those costs have amortized over a five-year period. Everybody seems to know this. Bob Carmody. Sam, I'm your age. I was a computer science major in college before I dumped that for my radio career. I'm sorry, Bob. Sarah from Newton. I dropped out of college to do a trade. My parents thought I was crazy. Now, 2 years after my friends graduated, they're struggling to find to get jobs. I mean, honestly, like, if this hadn't been my career, carpenter, and I would have done it because I would have enjoyed it, but then I would have been doing extremely well, I think. I think I would have done quite well as a carpenter. What's so funny about that? That's not.
No, I agree with that. I was just going to say.
What do you think built that over there, Brian? That little wood cart. It was me.
I don't know if that's the first
that's
thing.
Not the, that's not the best. That's not my best work, but there's just not a lot. It's not a lot around here.
I'll say the year and a half between graduating NYU and finding this job was probably the most radicalizing point in my life. And leaving, and I imagine I see the data, it's worse now finding a job after college. And I think that is a problem that I would think political elites should want to look at, because those people are going to be radicalized in one direction or another.
I saw what it did to you. You showed up here in a three-piece suit.
Wool suit.
A wool three-piece suit in the middle of the summer. Honestly, it was...
Radical guy.
Matt shows up. He's wearing a three-piece suit.
Club which, Monaco.
And then he sits down and he says, I read 150 books last year.
I was unemployed, remember?
And that he had a podcast where he would take the Nixon tapes and put them to house music so his friends would listen to it.
Sort of, yeah, dubstep, British dubstep.
I was like, all right.
Should bring that back.
All right, sold. is your bong in your backpack? Okay, you got the job. Tater Tot. When Sam went to school, it was abacus science. Reservoir Hogs. Adding on to the previous caller, I graduated in 2015 with a chemical engineering degree. It took me 18 months to find a job. This was in the middle of the big STEM push from the 08 recession. It's crazy. I can't imagine how difficult it is today for graduates leaving college in the lead up to a recession. Trilliflops, Sam fully embodying Steve Buscemi's character on 30 Rock when he tries to use the Twitch lingo. Was that on 30 Rock where he showed up like, hello, fellow kids, that thing? That meme, is that where that's from? Amazon Union Thug for Life, solidarity from Cincinnati. Go Zoran. Live, laugh, Luigi. QR codes pose way too much risk. So much tracking can be added to them. Even outside this context, only scan ones you trust. Yeah, that's true. Even if it comes on a package. I've heard stuff like now they're putting fake scans on fake packages at people's houses. And they're like, oh, get a $5 discount. You scan it, and then it, like, screws up your phone or does something like that. Scary Mountain Wizard. That was me. ICE was in Kingston last week. Be safe. All right, folks, we've run out of time for phone calls. We got to a bunch, though. I will probably just jump on my phone when the results are announced. We're not going to do a full-on, you know, evening of coverage. But I will undoubtedly jump on my phone and either celebrate or not. Okay. 10 more of these. Immortal Brandon, Colbert turning into the kind of guy he used to parody on Comedy Central. I really wonder about that. I'm very surprised. Steve Austin, the pre-show interviews for Colbert's Late Show must be killer comprehensive. Max Lefty, got my hat. Sweet. Get those trucker hats, folks. There's people are starting to get them. Also, Wisconsin voter here. I think it's important for someone to label themselves as a Dem socialist, even if he doesn't win. Just like anything, normalizing the term socialism for average voters is the only way to make progress. The Red Scare has totally bastardized the word socialist and communist. It's time to recapture and reeducate. I've had more good faith conversations this week around Mamdani being Dem socialist and what that would mean for the laws they try to pass. I think in specific situations, yes. And I think it can be, you want to win first. You don't want to sort of like, it's good to lose well, but you want to win first if you're in the opportunity to win. If it's a messaging campaign, I agree with you. But deploy it in a way that will help you win. Now, you know, Mamdani on Colbert or the Late Show, whatever it is, I thought he did a very good job of not retreating from his positions and articulating them in a way that people who disagree with him will still hear him, but without retreating on his positions. I was not a fan of Bernie Sanders opening up his 2020 campaign with a speech to sell the idea of socialism. I just feel like, why take on that project? Win. Then have people call you a socialist if you want. I'm not saying you should run from the you know, but there's an easy way to deal with this.
Especially when he's kind of like, he could call himself a New Deal Democrat too.
Yes. But, you know, you say, well, if socialism means that I believe everyone should have no cost health care, okay, I'm a socialist. If, you know, if socialists mean that we should have support from the state for daycare or, you know, nursing home care, whatever the set of policies are that you want to promote, that's fine. But to try and to launch the campaign with that, I know the theory was like, we're going to get attacked for this. You know, this will preempt any attacks. It's not going to preempt any attacks. Not everybody's listening to your speech at the beginning there anyways. Address it as it comes. Address it as it comes.
I think the synergy between the progressive and socialist flanks is the most impressive thing about this. And Lander,
with Landers, yeah, yes.
Like, I think the coordination has been really good, and I think that's the important lesson of this so far, win or lose.
Yeah, I agree. The same in audio issues on YouTube. I don't believe you.
Yeah, chat disagrees.
Naughty Queen, don't forget Section 70302 of Big Ugly Bill. I'm not sure what that is, but I will Google it. Brian, will you Google that? Section 70302 of Reconciliation Bill. We haven't had time to go over a lot of things stripped out by the parliamentarian, which is good. But it's still a garbage bill and going to cut and hurt millions of people. Dave from Tall in, and we will talk about it more in the week. Can I get a shofar for my birthday? Buried my father last week. You also played one for my father-in-law dying 3 years ago. Gosh.
I'm sorry.
So sorry about that. Dave, this is for you. Saturn Girl. Sam, I've noticed you have a disturbing lack of tactical products in your advertisements. As a trans small businesswoman, I've learned that the best way to sell anything to men is by making it tactical. You should contact Tushy and tell them to make a new model with camouflage specifically for a surprise attack, a.k.a. sharding. Oh, okay. Henry. Sam, they're going to clip that Trump impression you just did. Some horny fans are going to be super happy with you now. Tater Tot. When Sam went to school. Oh, yeah, I already read that. Speak Spitter. Is Russ not on staff anymore? No, Russ has left us. But Brian is here. I mean, or we just changed the name of the producer like every couple of weeks. Not actually the person, just the name. Anon But Q. My brother-in-law has an MBA from Stanford and has been in tech for 10 plus years. He's the worst. And he's been laid off three times in the past years, Salesforce and two smaller startups. He's seen a huge shift in hiring recently. There's not even much opportunity at senior levels either. So many people lock themselves into these disruptor fields and are totally effed now.
Fields that, as Jacob Silverman points out, were a function of our monetary policy, which was instead of helping people stay in their homes, we capitalized the big banks, including Silicon Valley.
CoStar. Additionally, LinkedIn is absolutely drowning in AI hype grifters right now. I see some drummed up nonsense there show up in my Slack same day lately.
That stuff all drove me crazy.
I'm a senior developer in the industry. I can confirm that AI and outsourcing are absolutely killing U.S. development jobs right now. Harder to get to work from clients because they don't want to pay for anything. Why so many hours? I can have ChatGPT do it in 10 minutes. Not true. It'll be garbage, but reason enough.
People paying for a lot of this stuff can't tell garbage from quality.
Someday, I'm not even going to be here, and it's just going to be a ChatGPT version.
Sam AI.
Strep Sam, I don't understand. What if what ICE is doing is crazy, how are we supposed to respond if not at least protest? Just let them be crazy and do nothing? I don't understand. No. Protesting is, I think, is
I think it's a response to Rogan and the both sides guy.
Oh, okay. Chicago letter carrier. The new postmaster general is going to gut the USPS. David Steiner is going to make DeJoy look like Eugene Debs. There's been no real coverage of him yet. His history as a lawyer is basic laundry list of being on the side of everything that's wrong in the legal system for the last three decades. We got to get on. I mean, it's so tough right now, folks. You know, we're trying to service. I can tell you from the perspective of the show, this Iran stuff, Gaza, immigration, and this bill, which has a timeline on it. And it does feel like there's stuff that's falling through the cracks. And it sucks. But we will, you know, we'll endeavor to do more. And the final I am of the day Jay Tingle. Sam's most innovative design and polished execution was the contraption to keep raccoons from eating the cat food. That's true. That is a
throwback.
Deep, deep cut from back in the day. Did you guys mention Abbott vetoed the THC ban?
We haven't, but tonight on Left Reckoning, 7 o'clock Eastern, David will be going deep into that.
He vetoed the THC ban?
Yep.
So it's not banned?
Nope. It's like the sort of Delta 9 sort of thing that they had, or Delta 8 or whatever, and he vetoed it, saying I mean, a lot of businesses wanted him to do it, so yeah, Patrick is freaking out.
But that's good or bad?
It's good. It's good. They did the right thing.
Matt, Brian, great job today. Annabelle, the intern, is in the building. I thought you did a good job observing today. This is the first day. Put her to real work soon. See you tomorrow. Or maybe tonight. Look for me on YouTube when the announcement comes. Or if there's any updates, I'll probably hop on too. Bye-bye.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know. Meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I guess somewhere the choice is made for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Know how far the detour takes you. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking.
It's not, but
no, I agree with that. I was just going to say.
What do you think built that over there, Brian? That little wood cart. It was me.
I don't know if that's the first
that's
thing.
Not the, that's not the best. That's not my best work, but there's just not a lot. It's not a lot around here.
I'll say the year and a half between graduating NYU and finding this job was probably the most radicalizing point in my life. And leaving, and I imagine, I see the data, it's worse now finding a job after college. And I think that is a problem that I would think political elites should want to look at, because those people are going to be radicalized in one direction or another.
I saw what it did to you. You showed up here in a three-piece suit.
Wool suit.
A wool three-piece suit in the middle of the summer. Honestly, it was...
Radical guy.
Matt shows up. He's wearing a three-piece suit.
Club which, Monaco.
And then he sits down and he says, I read 150 books last year.
I was unemployed, remember.
And that he had a podcast where he would take the Nixon tapes and put them to house music so his friends would listen to it.
Sort of, yeah, dubstep, British dubstep.
I was like, all right.
Should bring that back.
All right, sold. Is your bong in your backpack? Okay, you got the job. Tater tot. Sam went to school. When Sam went to school, it was abacus science. Reservoir Hogs. Adding on to the previous caller, I graduated in 2015 with a chemical engineering degree. It took me 18 months to find a job. This was in the middle of the big STEM push from the 08 recession. It's crazy. I can't imagine how difficult it is today for graduates leaving college in the lead up to a recession. Trilliflops, Sam fully embodying Steve Buscemi's character on 30 Rock when he tries to use the Twitch lingo. Was that on 30 Rock where he showed up like, hello, fellow kids, that thing? That meme, is that where that's from? Amazon Union Thug for Life, solidarity from Cincinnati, go Zoran. Live, laugh, Luigi. QR codes pose way too much risk. So much tracking can be added to them. Even outside this context, only scan ones you trust. Yeah, that's true. Even if it comes on a package. I've heard stuff like now they're putting fake scans on fake packages at people's houses. And they're like, oh, get a $5 discount. You scan it and then it like screws up your phone or does something like that. Scary Mountain Wizard, that was me. Ice was in Kingston last week. Be safe. All right, folks, we've run out of time for phone calls. We got to a bunch, though. I will probably just jump on my phone when the results are announced. We're not going to do a full-on, you know, evening of coverage. But I will undoubtedly jump on my phone and either celebrate or not. Okay, 10 more of these. Immortal Brandon, Colbert turning into the kind of guy he used to parody on Comedy Central. I really wonder about that. I'm very surprised. Steve Austin, the pre-show interviews for Colbert's Late Show must be killer comprehensive. Max Lefty, got my hat. Sweet. Get those trucker hats, folks. There's people are starting to get them. Also, Wisconsin voter here. I think it's important for someone to label themselves as a Dem socialist, even if he doesn't win. Just like anything, normalizing the term socialism for average voters is the only way to make progress. The Red Scare has totally bastardized the word socialist and communist. It's time to recapture and reeducate. I've had more good faith conversations this week around Mamdani being Dem socialist and what that would mean for the laws they try to pass. I think in specific situations, yes. And I think, like, I think it can be, you want to win first. You don't want to sort of, like, it's good to lose well, but you want to win first if you're in the opportunity to win. If it's a messaging campaign, I agree with you. But deploy it in a way that will help you win. Now, you know, Mamdani on Colbert or the Late Show, whatever it is, I thought he did a very good job of not retreating from his positions and articulating them in a way that people who disagree with him will still hear him, but without retreating on his positions. I was not a fan of Bernie Sanders opening up his 2020 campaign with a speech to sell the idea of socialism. I just feel like, why take on that project? Win. Then have people call you a socialist if you want. I'm not saying you should run from the you know, but there's an easy way to deal with this.
Especially when he's kind of like, he could call himself a New Deal Democrat too.
Yes. But, you know, you say, well, if socialism means that I believe everyone should have no cost health care, okay, I'm a socialist. If, you know, if socialists mean that we should have support from the state for daycare or, you know, nursing home care, whatever the set of policies are that you want to promote, that's fine. But to try and to launch the campaign with that, I know the theory was like, we're going to get attacked for this. You know, this will preempt any attacks. It's not going to preempt any attacks. Not everybody's listening to your speech at the beginning there anyways. Address it as it comes. Address it as it comes.
I think the synergy between the progressive and socialist flanks is the most impressive thing about this. And Lander,
with Landers, yeah, yes.
Like, I think the coordination has been really good, and I think that's the important lesson of this so far, win or lose.
Yeah, I agree. The same in audio issues on YouTube. I don't believe you.
Yeah, chat disagrees.
Naughty Queen, don't forget section 70302 of Big Ugly Bill. I'm not sure what that is, but I will Google it. Brian, will you Google that? Section 70302 of Reconciliation Bill. We haven't had time to go over a lot of things stripped out by the parliamentarian, which is good. But it's still a garbage bill and going to cut and hurt millions of people. Dave from Tall in, and we will talk about it more in the week. Can I get a shofar for my birthday? Buried my father last week. You also played one for my father-in-law dying 3 years ago. Gosh.
Oh, sorry.
So sorry about that. Dave, this is for you. Saturn Girl. Sam, I've noticed you have a disturbing lack of tactical products in your advertisements. As a trans small businesswoman, I've learned that the best way to sell anything to men is by making it tactical. You should contact Tushy and tell them to make a new model with camouflage specifically for a surprise attack, a.k.a. sharding. Oh, okay. Henry. Sam, they're going to clip that Trump impression you just did. Some horny fans are going to be super happy with you now. Tater Tot. When Sam went to school. Oh, yeah, I already read that. Speak Spitter. Is Russ not on staff anymore? No, Russ has left us. But Brian is here. I mean, or we just changed the name of the producer like every couple of weeks. Not actually the person, just the name. Anon But Q, my brother-in-law has an MBA from Stanford and has been in tech for 10 plus years. He's the worst. And he's been laid off three times in the past years, Salesforce and two smaller startups. He's seen a huge shift in hiring recently. There's not even much opportunity at senior levels either. So many people lock themselves into these disruptor fields and are totally effed now.
Fields that, as Jacob Silverman points out, were a function of our monetary policy, which was instead of helping people stay in their homes, we capitalized the big banks, including Silicon Valley.
CoStar. Additionally, LinkedIn is absolutely drowning in AI hype grifters right now. I see some drummed up nonsense there show up in my Slack same day lately.
That stuff all drove me crazy.
I'm a senior developer in the industry. I can confirm that AI and outsourcing are absolutely killing U.S. development jobs right now. Harder to get to work from clients because they don't want to pay for anything. Why so many hours? I can have ChatGPT do it in 10 minutes. Not true. It'll be garbage, but reason enough.
People paying for a lot of this stuff can't tell garbage from quality.
Someday, I'm not even going to be here, and it's just going to be a ChatGPT version.
Sam AI.
Strep Sam, I don't understand. What if what ICE is doing is crazy, how are we supposed to respond, if not at least protest? Just let them be crazy and do nothing? I don't understand. No. Protesting is, I think, is
I think it's a great response to Rogan and the both sides guy.
Oh, okay. Chicago letter carrier. The new postmaster general is going to gut the USPS. David Steiner is going to make DeJoy look like Eugene Debs. There's been no real coverage of him yet. His history as a lawyer is basic laundry list of being on the side of everything that's wrong in the legal system for the last three decades. We got to get on. I mean, it's so tough right now, folks. You know, we're trying to service. I can tell you from the perspective of the show, this Iran stuff, Gaza, immigration, and this bill, which has a timeline on it, and it does feel like there's stuff that's falling through the cracks, and it sucks. But we will, you know, we'll endeavor to do more. And the final IM of the day Jay Tingle. Sam's most innovative design and polished execution was the contraption to keep raccoons from eating the cat food. That's true. That is a
throwback.
Deep cut from back in the day. Did you guys mention Abbott vetoed the THC ban?
We haven't, but tonight on Left Reckoning, 7 o'clock Eastern, David will be going deep into that.
He vetoed the THC ban.
Yep.
So it's not banned.
Nope. It's like the sort of Delta 9 sort of thing that they had, or Delta 8 or whatever, and he vetoed it, saying I mean, a lot of businesses wanted him to do it, so yeah, Patrick is freaking out.
But that's good or bad?
It's good. It's good. They did the right thing.
Matt, Brian, great job today. Annabelle, the intern, is in the building. I thought you did a good job observing today. This is the first day. Put her to real work soon. See you tomorrow. Or maybe tonight. Look for me on YouTube when the announcement comes. Or if there's any updates, I'll probably hop on too. Bye-bye.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know. Meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light's shining bright. I guess somewhere the choice is made for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive.